I can do it.
Okay, go for it.
This is Tom Umstadt and Thomas Umstadt, and we are giving a talk about federal income taxes
at the Austin Entrepreneurs Meetup Group on March sometime 2014.
I think it's around the 23rd or 24th, something like that. So we are talking. I can tell you what date it is. It's 25th. March 25th. Good. I'd rather not. Except to maybe get everybody to shut up. We should come back. Yeah.
Our presence up here.
Yeah.
Wow, that went faster that time. All right, so welcome. We're going to get started. Our original plan was to go through this, like, talk with an outline, and then we realized that y'all had about 40 questions that you sent in on the RSVP, and so we figured everyone would leave a lot happier if we just answered your questions. So we're going to go through and answer some questions, but before we do that, I'd like to introduce my father, Tom Umstadt, CPA. So he's been doing taxes in Texas since before I was born. He's been a CPA for over 30 years, and to kind of establish his credibility, let me tell you this one story. I was at a bank here in Texas setting up a bank account for one of my companies.
One of those things.
And as I was there, the president of the bank came by. He's like, oh, a new account holder. So he comes, shakes my hand, and he's like, so what's your name? And I introduced myself, Tom Umstadt. He's like, Tom Umstadt, are you related to Tom Umstadt? I'm like, yes, that's my dad. He's like, your dad is really smart. And I'm like, yes, that's my dad. So, you know, I won't say which bank this was, but it was cool to, like, have financial people, like, in positions of power see my dad as an influencer, because apparently there's this, like, high council meeting of CPAs where they gather, you know, periodically to talk about new rules, and so in that high council meeting, he is well-respected from what I've heard from the buzz around town. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Thomas, for having me. It's a pleasure seeing all these vibrant entrepreneurs out here ready to listen about income taxes, huh? That'll get a crowd out.
To hear about this. Tony and I were just discussing that this is a very different crowd than we normally have at our meetups. Normally it's about 30% folks new to town, and a lot of folks who are just at the freelancer stage, whereas today it's a lot more people who are a little bit more established in their business and are asking a little bit deeper questions. So that is fun. So do we have an obligatory disclaimer?
We do. I looked around the room, and I don't see any of my clients. If you don't have to raise your hand, but I'm going to assume that no one is my client out there. And although I am a CPA, that's Certified Public Accountant, it doesn't look like I am your CPA. So, and I probably don't even know you very well. Therefore, you can't rely on anything that you're going to be hearing as an alternative to using your own CPA to get some personal advice or accounting tax advice. You need to go to your own qualified professional CPA. And so it'll be kind of general. And I was talking to somebody here earlier, and I was realizing real quick that the way I practice is that I just get to the heart of the issue real quick. And in order to get there, I have to go through all this privilege. And when you ask follow-up questions of what we talk about, I'm going to try real hard not to embarrass you. But sometimes I have to ask a question. And if I ask a question that's maybe inappropriate, and you don't want other people to know, like, how much you made or how many businesses you failed in or whatever it is, you might just say, well, I plead the fifth, you know.
All right, so let's get started with some basic questions. And I think before we get into the deep nitty-gritty, what is a tax deduction and how does it work?
Well, it's funny because a tax deduction is something that that you pay for, and it is able to be deducted from your taxable income on your federal income tax. I'm looking for deer in headlights look, so feel free to give me those, and I'll just kind of try to play off of them, and I might repeat myself if I see too many of those. So, and they're specified in the tax law, which is a conglomeration of everything from the Internal Revenue Code down to private letter rulings.
So are they the same as a charitable deduction?
No.
So this is in addition to charitable deductions?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So here's a question a lot of folks are wondering is how do I reduce my chances of getting audited by the IRS?
Okay. I would say the most audits I've ever seen or heard about is because of simple mistakes on a tax return. When the IRS like mines for revenue out there. We all file our income tax returns, and we do it voluntarily. Then if we don't do it voluntarily, then they make us do it anyway. So, but the first step is we volunteer this information. Hopefully we don't hurry through it and make mistakes. And one of the easiest ways to make mistakes is to hurry. Or to do your tax return like on April 15th or something at 9 o'clock at night. I just see a lot of returns that are filed that last week of right before April 15th as being audit potential. So the making mistakes, try not to make mistakes. The other ways that you might get audited would be to have a rather unusual number or something going on in your life, like having a $100,000 loss on your Schedule C business. How many of y'all have Schedule C businesses out here? Okay, how many operate as in a partnership or an LLC partnership? Oh, a lot more than I thought.
Okay, who has no idea what a Schedule C is?
Yeah, how many? Okay. All right, thank you. All right, what about like an S corporation or a C corporation? Have many of these? Okay. Most of what I'm talking about will be for the partnership and individual income taxes, although we can get into whatever you want to talk about. But mistakes, having a big number, and if you have a big number, like let's say you have a $200,000 charitable contribution, it'd be probably a good idea to attach some explanation as to why you have that. And maybe even some receipts or something, especially if you gave an airplane to a church or something, then you know that's actually you have to attach a schedule for that. But sometimes you don't have to, and sometimes giving a little bit more information about a really, really weird thing is helpful to avoid an audit.
Is there a certain time of year where if I file during this time of year, I'm more likely to get audited?
Yes, the first 2 weeks of April. And if you don't extend your return, that also gives you a higher probability of being audited. I've had a client that couldn't understand why he was getting audited. And the IRS agent, who's now the manager, he said, real candidly, he said, well, he was the only one in this partnership that did not extend their return. So we picked him. So. And for many, many years, I mandated all my clients to extend their tax returns. Even if they got it in January and I finished it, I'd still extend it. I'm not so pugnacious now. I'm just kind of an old guy and I get pushed around a little bit sometimes, especially when they're older than me.
So if I haven't filed my taxes yet, uh-huh. It's already March 25th or whatever, your recommendation would be to wait and extend my return instead of getting in this high target zone.
Yeah, we got about 20 days before the deadline. It might be a good idea to extend it, unless you really have all your ducks in a line, you feel real good about it. But still, you can get it out by April 15th, but I still would extend it.
Okay. What about e-filing? Does that reduce or increase my chances of getting audited? Or does it?
It makes it easier for the IRS to get information from you. And that's not answering your question. I don't know. So many returns that have audit potential on it, you cannot e-file because they're too complicated. And those are the ones that are more likely to be audited. But that's a circular reasoning thing going on. So, But if you have a choice whether to e-file or not e-file, I would tend to, at this point, say that e-filing would probably be a better choice.
Okay. All right, so now let's move on to travel and mileage questions. We have a lot of folks asking about travel. Is tracking mileage and fuel really worth it? I've never done it, and it seems like such a hassle.
Well, it can be a hassle, and it is a very good thing to do. I would say that it is probably the single biggest tax deduction that is not taken on the tax return. And because you do a lot of traveling around for business purposes that you don't realize you do. Like, and if you start keeping some kind of record, then it starts putting you in a mindset of, well, is this a business trip or is it not a business trip? I'm going to the bank. Well, I guess that'd be a business trip. I need to find a new office, and I need to look at some of these other office buildings. There's a sign for lease. Let me write down the number, you know. And the next thing you know, you're on a business trip. And so, or let's say you go to a party and you didn't have any intention of doing any business there at all, and somebody finds out what business you're doing or starting, and you start telling them about it, and next thing you know, you have a possible business contact. Well, was that a business trip, even though you did not intend it to be, but it wound up being one? One thing about the Internal Revenue Code in our 16th Amendment that we have that when it made us pay income taxes is that our government laws are based on rational thought and things that are ordinary and reasonable and sustainable and objective. And if we can prove something is deductible and we have some authority to do it, then you're very likely going to win if it was ever scrutinized. And that's kind of the way I look at anything. If this was getting audited, would it pass? And right now, the IRS, last 5 or so years, has really acquiesced on digging into automobile logs and auditing that. And I have been through a few audits on this, and you know, I show the car to the auditor. They want to see the home office because that's what really gets you real high mileage. If you can have a home office, then it's like almost everything you drive is a business trip. And I know some of you think, yeah, I want a home office. I want to get away from the office. I don't want to put it in my home. But if your life lends itself to that sort of thing, home offices really get those mileage rates and the business miles up to high numbers
To share an app with you that I just discovered that is totally rocking my world on this, and it's called Mile IQ, and it tracks any time you move, and then it puts a dot where you started and where you ended, and then you swipe left to right or right to left, whether it's work or personal. So here's a trip that I took to Liberty Hill. It was for a business activity, so I just swipe to the right, and it logs it. And so then it's that easy, and I can log my travel.
Mile IQ.
And I don't think I paid for it. It may have been a couple of bucks.
But,
it's got this little export button. I just got this. So
okay,
I haven't. But what I did one time that my dad recommended is like log really detailed on a piece of paper in this little book for a month. And I did that, and it was like the most miserable month of my life. It was like a representative sample. But then I was like, I have this representative sample to show the IRS, and then they never asked for it. So I was like, I don't want to go through that again. So anyway, back to the questions. What travel expenses can I write off?
I'm just curious. Yeah. How many people keep an automobile log or keep track of your miles? And you hate it, right? Well, how many people do it for the whole year? Anybody do it for the whole year? Yeah. What about just like a representative sample during the year, like a month or a few weeks? Anybody do that? Okay. This is good enough for the IRS right now. If you have a small sample, if it's representative, and if your life can be, there may be an average somewhere in your life 1 month. If that exists in your life, then that would be a good month to pick. And so it really makes a big difference. And after you find out how much of a big difference it makes, then it's not so painful. How many people like to save money on their taxes? Yeah, okay, I'm getting your attention. You're here. I'm glad.
So am I hearing you say that you can literally do it for just increments throughout the year, but not necessarily the entire year, as long as you're consistent
Well, I think you're. It's not like cherry picking, you know. I said, well, this day I drove 300 miles, and that day I drove 400 miles, and I didn't drive anything. You know, you can't just pick the big days. You pick like a week or a month or something, and do it the whole time. Yeah.
And as long as that represents a consistent representation of what you do throughout the whole year, that would be acceptable.
Yeah.
Well, you're starting and ending, right?
Yeah. At the first of the year, when the big ball goes up or down, wherever it does, you write down the odometer on your car, okay, every year. And if you didn't do that, then you have repair bills. You can work to it and extrapolate that away. So
that's how you get the total number of miles that you did this year. So let's say I had drove, you know, my car starts at 100,000 miles on January 1, and the next January 1, it's 130,000 miles. So now I drove 30,000 miles, and if 2/3 of that was for work, then I know that 20,000 miles were deductible and 10,000 miles were not. That's kind of how it works. Okay.
And you brought up another audit thing. Whenever you see 20,000 miles total business, 15,000 miles were for this, you know, whenever you have round numbers on, like, when you report it to the government, that just kind of sounds like you're just picking numbers out of the air. Did you have a question, ma'am? Yeah, she's wondering how she should pay for her gas, and I assume other car expenses too, whether you should use your personal card or rent through the business. And you have a corporation, I presume?
LLC.
Okay, is it taxed as a corporation or a Schedule C on your tax return?
Corporation.
Is it a corporation?
So it has its own tax return?
Yes.
Okay. What I would do probably is just keep track of your business miles only. It's a lot less hassle unless you really like to keep track of records. Because right now we're at 56 and a half or 56 cents a mile, something like that. And that's pretty good. Back when I was about some of your ages, it was like 12 cents a mile, you know. And so now 56 is really a good number. And so if you just keep track of it and then charge your corporation for the number of miles, have them write you a check, especially if you can do it towards the end of the year so you don't have any missing deductions. That's a real painless way to do it.
Because 56 cents a mile includes wear and tear on the car and gas and all of that, right?
Yeah, everything except for interest on the car and tolls and parking tickets, you know, like paying somewhere to park.
If I get a parking ticket on a business trip, is that tax deductible?
Not very likely.
All right.
Unless you talk about your business to the officer.
Wow, that I like that idea, but I still don't think so though.
If you rent a car as opposed to using your own car for a business trip, is the rental price of the car tax
deductible? Okay, are we renting or leasing?
Okay, so I'm going to go to Nashville for a business trip.
Right.
I don't want to put the miles on my car.
Oh, I like this.
So
this
I
is good.
Rent a car. I don't want to put the miles on.
No, you don't want to do that.
So I would rent a car instead.
Did everybody hear the question? Okay, the question was, if I rent a car for like a business trip in Nashville, for example, and I don't want to put the miles on my regular car, is that a deduction? Yes, it is. It's a business trip. And that's another thing, perhaps the second most popular business deduction not taken are those mistakes that you make in life, like that I shouldn't have paid so much for that computer, or I shouldn't have hired this person, or I shouldn't have gotten into this thing, I lost so much money, and you want to just take all that out of your mind and not take care of it and not to keep track of it. But when it comes tax time, you want to put all those deductions on there. It may be painful to remember some of that stuff, but it's deductible if it's a business deduction. And this may or may not be a good idea to do something like that. I really like that kind of ideas because it doesn't wear your cars out so much, and I like to keep my cars forever.
Yes.
About what you said, I'm sure you agree. She cannot deduct the cost of the rent that ends the miles.
Right, yeah, he was, the question was, you can't take the miles on a rental car. That is correct. You take the actual expenses on a rental car. You don't actually own that car. But you take the mileage on the car that you actually own.
And the gas you put in it.
You can take actual expenses, which is gas, repairs, insurance, license, whatever, and then take a prorated amount. Or you can simply just take the mileage rate. Either way, you have to keep the mileage.
But when you have the rental car, gas.
She's saying the gas for the rental car.
Gas, insurance for the rental car, the rent that you pay for the rental car, all that's deductible.
Yes.
Is there like one document that has all of this that we're covering? Answer all of these questions?
Well, okay, his question was, is there like a PDF document for all the questions that you would need to ask and answer? I have one on my website. It's not necessarily exhaustive, and it's not tailored for you to do your own tax return as it is for me to mine for those little areas that we forget to talk about. I know you don't like IRS.gov, but you can just take a Schedule C and look at what there is written down there. Like, it says supplies, it says entertainment, it says travel, it says advertising. Oh, that's right, it had advertising, and that'll help.
What's that CPA website you mentioned?
There's a CPA website. Let me get it exactly. I had to call my office to make sure I get it right. It's called AskACPA.pro, AskACPA.pro, and that's a good place to get many of your questions answered, etc.
All right, we have time for one more question. We need to move on beyond travel. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, home office in two different homes. And are they in the same town?
No.
Okay, so like one's in Austin?
Yeah, one's in the Hardy Woods and one's in Austin.
Okay, one's near Houston and the other one's in Austin. And you have a business purpose for each location, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you do business. I would say that you could have two separate home offices, although I wouldn't call one of those places is going to be your homestead and your tax home. And the other one will be like a second home, or it'll be like a second office. And so, yes, you could, one of them would be like a home office. I'd call the other one just a second, well, not a home office. That's the way I would do it. If you want to have two home offices, you can have that if you sell one house and buy another one or something like that. But concurrently, somehow or another, that just kind of strikes me as being odd.
So name the second one something different.
Yeah, just say other office. And put it just directly straight onto your Schedule C or your corporate return or your partnership return. I'm sorry, one more time? The travel between the two would be deductible.
All right, so let's move on to entity questions. We didn't actually have a lot of entity questions on LLCs or S-Corps. We only had one. If you have other questions about LLC versus S-Corp, just ask it afterwards. We can get to it. But I'm going to skip asking that by default. And instead, we have a question. If I have a separate S-Corp outside of my wife and it's W-2 roles that's not yet generating income but has expense, how is that treated as come tax time?
Hope the person that asked that question is here.
okay,
do you want to, I'm trying to understand the question.
You want to re-ask the question?
Can you re-ask it?
So if I have an S-Corp, it's not generating revenue but does have expenses to it, how is that treated outside of filing our taxes together?
Okay, S-corporations file their own tax returns. It's on 1120S. And if it's, so you're not generating a lot of gross income yet?
Correct.
Okay, and then you have expenses like maybe the S-corporation is paying your wife and?
No, it's separate from her paying other employees part-time, freelance, that kind of stuff.
Okay, so there is payroll in the S-corporation right now?
Yes.
Okay. He said yes, and there's a recording. Apparently, they can't hear you. and so you would have to do payroll, the 940s and TWCs and 941s and the W-2s and W-3 and all that kind of stuff. And so I'm still trying to grasp the question here. I'm just talking around it, but I don't think I'm getting the heart of what you're getting.
You file jointly.
Oh, is that what you're wondering, if you should file separately or jointly?
Yeah, we file jointly, mm-hmm. and then we have an S-corp on the side that's generating more in expenses than revenue.
Right.
I'm curious what that's going to look like.
Okay, the S-corporation expenses, most of them should flow onto your Form 1040,
okay.
onto the Schedule E, page 2. And you file jointly as individuals.
Correct, yeah.
Okay. Did I answer that?
Yeah,
fairly well.
More or less.
You can hit me up later if I'm.
A little bit different.
So I'm filing as an S corp, and I know that you have to file quarterly as an S corp. But my first year of business, and right now, as his situation, I'm taking losses. I'm in startup mode, so I haven't profited anything. Do I still file quarterly if I don't have any profits to record, or should I wait until next year to start filing?
Okay. This lady has an S corporation. She's wondering about filing quarterly. Now, there are a number of different quarterly filings. One would be payroll. Do you have any payroll yet?
No.
Okay, so then you don't have to file payroll taxes quarterly because you don't have a payroll yet. Another one would be income taxes. You perhaps have another job on the side. If you did, then they would perhaps be withholding taxes on that income. And if you're not making any money, you don't have to pay any tax. That's one way to get out of paying tax. I saw that as one of the questions on there. You know, there's a lot of ways to not pay tax. And not all of them are good courses of action.
Being dead apparently also gets you out of paying taxes. Well, I guess maybe not. Actually.
Well, income taxes anyway.
All right, moving on. What is the best way to organize myself to pay taxes with a 1099? So I'm just going to assume this is somebody who's recently self-employed.
Huh.
They're doing this Schedule C for the first time. So how do they kind of prepare for doing their own taxes?
Okay. How many people know what a 1099 is? Okay. Just about everybody. Okay. So when you receive a 1099, that means you are a contractor working for someone else as a non-employee. And so it's up to you to pay your taxes and to keep track of your own expenses and that sort of thing. And so the question is, what's the best way to keep track of all those wonderful deductions that we get to take on a Schedule C is likely where it'll wind up going. And so have a separate bank account for your business and don't put any non-business things going in and out of your business account, and try not to have any business things through your personal account. Now, you don't legally have to do that, but we're talking administrative benefit.
I just want to underline this real quick because this has totally saved my life. So I have two bank accounts. It's more complicated now, but when I first got started, and they each had their own card. So like I'm at an event like this, and I have to pay for the meals, training, I would just hand them the business card, or I'd hand them the personal card, and it was all separated all year long. So there was no trying to decide, okay, I spent $20 at the Flying Saucer in March, that was like a year ago, what on earth was that for? There's none of that. It's already pre-separated. And of all of the things that are like going to increase your stress, less reduce your stress, this is a huge thing for me. And now I've got, you know, credit cards instead of debit cards, so I get miles, so I'm able to get the tax deduction and the miles, which is kind of nice, although it tempts me to spend more than I should.
You can always use coin, too. I mean, once that comes out, right?
So
you
Bitcoin?
Can, yeah. No, coin. The singular card where you can store eight cards in one card.
Gotcha.
You just have to personal business.
Did you have a question?
Yeah. So let's say I'm at Whole Foods. I'm doing work, right? And I decide to go get some lunch. Business expense or personal?
The question was, I'm at Whole Foods, and I'm doing work at Whole Foods, like on my computer or whatever,
at the cafe,
and I'm buying lunch. I would say that doesn't sound very deductible to me because you're not actually meeting anybody. You could have easily had that in your home, or in the fact that you're doing business. The first thought is it would be hard to prove that one. There are ways to make that work, and they're kind of almost more trouble than they're worth. It really helps if you're meeting with a business associate. That kind of solves a lot of problems. A client, a patient, someone that you used to work for, or used to work for you, and you're talking business. And if you do it over the lunch, then yes, that's good. Or if you have a business meeting at your office, and then you go out after that, and you don't talk about business at all, but it immediately preceded or proceeded a business meeting, then that would be a business reason. Or maybe you go out to watch the Round Rock Express or somebody, you know, some kind of sports event or something like that before or after a business contact. That works too.
One suggestion, because I was in that place where I was just kind of roving from coffee shop to coffee shop because I didn't want to be at home all the time, but I didn't really have any place to work. And what I finally did was I paid for a co-working space in East Austin, and that was one of the best business decisions I ever made. I was like so freaked out about spending $250 a month in rent for co-working. And for those of you who aren't familiar with co-working, it's like a gym membership for office space. But it was so good for me for several reasons. One, I was surrounded by other people who were in a similar place that I was in their businesses. And it was like a second business degree, just listening to people interacting with clients, being surrounded by expertise. I was building websites and there was other web developers, and so we'd go to each other with questions. So what I used to have to Google for and hunt, I'm sitting around all of these other experts, and the networking was really good because you got to know people really well, and people would call the co-working space just to hire people. So we'd get referrals just for being there, and it ended up being a really good business expense, and I was really bummed when I grew out of it and had too many employees to fit because it's hard to scale inside a co-working space. But they're month-to-month typically, and there may be some co-working owners. Anybody here run a co-working space? Okay, occasionally we'll have folks who run some. Austin's a real hub for that. And so just a suggestion. I was very thankful that I did. All right, moving on. The next question is, what's the best way to stay on top of tax books? QuickBooks, Neat, etc. So I don't have to spend a week looking at my books come tax time. So I guess this is a question about like what software tools do you recommend?
Well, I think QuickBooks is good. It's one we use a lot. The IRS doesn't like it because you can go back and change things years later, and they like it when you have something like an older version or more expensive, perhaps like Peachtree or some one of those others. How many people here use like QuickBooks, or just stick with that? What
who
else?
Who uses Excel or some sort of like paper? Okay, a couple people use Excel. Uh-huh. Who doesn't really use anything? They just have a bunch of receipts in a box. Okay.
I'm moving out of that though.
Okay.
But it works for me now.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. What else do you use besides what we said?
Yeah. It's a zero.
Zero?
Yeah.
Do you like that?
Yeah. Just switched this month and it's amazing. It's a lot more user friendly, I'm finding it.
Okay. More user friendly than QuickBooks?
QuickBooks Online.
Zero is more friendly than
QuickBooks.
Okay. How many people have used QuickBooks Online and just your regular QuickBooks? Is there anyone that's used both of those? Yeah. What did you think about the difference?
I actually my assistant does both of mine, and we went back to the regular.
Yeah.
I didn't like the online.
Yeah, that's kind of my feeling as well. Although some of my clients make me do it.
I use QuickBooks Online, and I hate it. I don't recommend it. Zero just raised, from my understanding, either $80 million or $180 million in their most recent venture capitaling round, funding round. So I like
Xero's like multiple integration. Like I do invoicing through FreshBooks and it's like seamless. I mean, there's some changes you have to make in case a customer decides not to continue or something like that, but it's very easy.
Yeah, I just told him my accountant, it's coming to the U.S. It's really popular in Europe and Australia and New Zealand right now. It's a New Zealand company, mm-hmm. And it's for sure on the way. Yeah.
And what company was that again?
Xero.
Xero. Okay, so there's two people use Xero here? Is there anybody else? Okay, Xero seems like it's up and coming.
All right, so moving on. What red flags does the IRS look for in tax returns from small businesses?
Well, we already said mistakes. That's the number one red flag. Big amounts, which I already talked about earlier, that's unusual. High charitable contributions, high medical deductions. I wish I could say this wasn't true, but when something bad happens to you, like getting a divorce or somebody dying, the IRS kind of like, oh, you're not done with your grief yet. They tend to pick on people like that. Isn't that just a heartless thing to say? But it is unfortunately true. These are red flags, if you want to call them red flags. There's a thing that the IRS does every year, which is called a DIF score. Anybody ever heard of that before? It's the probability of your return being audited. And so every year they change what criteria they use to measure this score, and every return receives a score, ostensibly. The IRS makes a lot of statements that I kind of don't always believe. But so everybody has a DIF score, and so the higher your DIF score, the more probability you are that your return gets picked by a human being and looks at it. And that's what you don't want. You don't want someone in the compliance area of the IRS looking at your return, if you can help it. And so another thing, and I don't want to sound self-serving, but to have a CPA sign your return with a CPA after it sure looks a lot better than when the name of the firm doesn't have CPA in it. If it's some, you know, like whatever tax, you know, preparing stuff. You know, that I don't want to diss those people or anything, but it is the way I've seen it.
I kind of look at it this way. I kind of see the IRS as like bandits in the woods, and you're a merchant going through the woods, and having a CPA is like having an armed guard. So it doesn't mean that they're not going to try to attack you, but it means it's going to be more hassle. And if there's a merchant right behind you that doesn't have an armed guard, they're going to go for that one. It's kind of like, you know, if you have... you know, three bicycles on a rack, and they're all three locked with one lock, and one of them's locked with two locks, the criminal's going to go after one of the one lock because it's just easier. And so you make yourself less of a target.
Plus the CPA is deductible in itself. Right?
Yeah, plus the CPA is deductible. So, yeah, I am, as not a CPA, as someone who doesn't get money for CPA, I think it's a great investment. And I have heard kind of being around CPAs a lot. In fact, one of my employees, you know, saving thousands and thousands of dollars with deductions they didn't know about, or thinking about their business in the future in ways they don't know, because that's one of the real benefits is, oh, if you make this minor tweak today, it can save you thousands of dollars next year in your taxes. Those are the sorts of things a tax preparer isn't going to do. They're not going to give you forward-thinking strategies. So even if you don't have a CPA every year, getting a CPA for the first years of your business can really help put you on a solid foundation. All right. We're almost out of time, and we have a lot more questions. How are we doing? Are y'all wanting to keep going, or do you want to switch to networking? I kind of get a vibe that people are still pretty connected.
How many people love me? Okay.
Quick question. Let's say you were a contractor, and you didn't take all the deductions. Can you go back and revisit that, or is it too late?
The question is, I missed taking deductions in previous years. Can I go back and fix them? Easy answer is anything happened in the last 3 years, you can always amend returns. Another thing that might have happened is that some of those deductions really were like research and development or startup expenses or organization costs or purchase of assets. And maybe it's too much trouble or hassle or expense to amend a previous year return, but you can take the depreciation in subsequent returns. Just because you missed it the first year doesn't mean you can't take it the second year. And how's that for? Is that too short of an answer?
Okay. All right. Are there special rules for online sales to other states and countries?
Yes.
All right. Next question. So I think the question is about sales taxes. And in general, right now, you don't have to charge and collect sales taxes from someone in another state. However, Amazon is putting millions and millions of dollars into lobbying to change that. So Amazon wants a one national online sales tax that you pay all over the country, because Amazon has to deal with like 435 different taxing districts because they have a presence and it's really complicated. So they're trying to stick it to the little guy and change the laws. And so keep an eye on that. And, you know, call your congressman if you don't want that to happen to
you. I'd like to ask, how many people have been through a sales tax audit in any state, Texas or anything? But what was that like a service industry, or what kind of business was it? Okay, and so they were trying to tax the service of that you were selling software, little packages. Is that what you were doing?
They were also trying to tax some of the add-on value add.
Okay, and how successful were they on taxing the add-on values?
They didn't get it.
They didn't get it. Okay, I like to hear that. Praise God. All right, anybody else? This is a real area of litigation right now, or I wish it was, and so many clients and CPA attorneys are trying to take the Texas Comptroller's Office to court on this very issue, and not, and the clients are wanting to settle out of court and not make it a precedent, and it's good to hear that. Anybody else? A sales tax audit? That's it? Okay, thank you.
All right. Do I need to file if I don't have taxable income? Which corporation... Okay, this is kind of a double question. Which corporation type works best if my business model is not firmed? So let's take those separately.
Okay. I think, you know, this is a general question. I'll give you a general answer. Usually you start off, if you just start working, you know, and you say, you know, what is a Schedule C? I don't even know what that is. And you're in business. Well, you are a Schedule C, whether you realize it or not, unless you have a partner. And so that's the default, if I can use a computer term, that you wind up being. Is you have a Schedule C, and so you have gross income, and you got your business expenses, and the net you pay tax on. And that's a good way to start off. Now, if there's a certain amount of liability that you're concerned about, not that much of a bigger step is form an LLC, and for the state of Texas, and most laws are within Texas law when you get sued or be sued. And so your LLC gives you protection and maybe some people don't know who you are if you want to be anonymous in doing your business. And that could be a protection as well. And then you can still file as on a Schedule C even though you have an LLC. And then maybe you're getting bigger, and then you might want to mutate into either a partnership or an S corporation. Or maybe even a C corporation later on down the pike.
So just to clarify, as an LLC, I can choose how to be taxed and
right.
change that over time. So if your business model isn't very firm, that gives you the most flexibility. You have the LLC, and you can kind of figure out the rest as you go.
Exactly. The IRS did not write a separate title or chapter to the Internal Revenue Code to deal with LLCs. They said, you decide what you want to be, and that's what you will be.
All right.
And you can change that is what you're saying, right?
Right. So like, yeah. For instance, I started off. He can't talk about me because of liability stuff, or confidentiality, but I don't mind telling you about me. I started off being charged as a pass-through. I was just onto my Schedule C with the LLC that I had as a company. And as I started getting more employees, it made sense for my company to be taxed as an S-corp. And so he did the magic. I don't know exactly what all he did.
It's really easy to do.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
It's much easier to go. It's very... Yeah, it's real easy. You pay me a lot of money, yeah. You had a question?
I did. I was curious, if you start out as an LLC, and I understand that there's the more money you make, there's obviously the advantage to going to an S-corp to avoid some of that tax. Would there ever be a reason that you would go from an S-corp back to an LLC?
Yes, I did it myself. I did it myself in my accounting practice.
Okay.
There were reasons for me to practice as an S corporation back in the day, and then those reasons went away. I didn't see any, and all I could see is now this big franchise tax that I may have to pay if I get earning too much in all the other businesses that are attributed to me that I own more than 50% on. The next thing you know, I got this franchise tax problem. So if I keep my practice as an S corporation, I pay more franchise taxes. And I didn't, you know, it didn't make any sense. And you can go back and forth. The one thing that's rather difficult is once you go into a C corporation, any C corporations here? Okay. You got to be careful going from a C corporation to an S corporation. That you need some good advice before you do something like that.
Okay. We had several people ask this question in a bunch of different ways. But it was basically, how do I pay no taxes?
All right, well, we talked about not making any income. You can do tax evasion and spend 10 years or 5 years on good behavior. And
in jail.
Yeah, right, in jail. No, that's not a good course of action, and I don't advocate any of that. There are plenty of loopholes out there that we can all take advantage of that are legal. We don't have to go and do crazy things. And I've seen some doozies out there, especially in Houston. I don't know what it is about Houston CPAs, but they're just, and I practiced there for 5 years, and I saw some things there as well. It was crazy. But ways to not pay taxes, it's a better way to put that is, I only want to pay my fair share. I don't want to pay other people's fair share. Render unto Caesar only that which is Caesar's, okay? And keeping track of records, I think the driving thing is good. Keeping an automobile log and keep track of your miles, that really works well. Maybe there's something that, like if you have a C corp, just a regular Schedule C business, and you hire no one but your husband or wife, you can a lot of times have a Section 104 medical reimbursement plan, which works better than anything I've ever seen in my life. They do not work well with S corporations or partnerships, but they work really well with C corporations and with a Schedule C. Yes, sir. This is one of my favorite areas of tax accounting. If you have losses for 2 years or 3 years or 5 years or 10 years or whatever, when is it that you are really not running a business but more like having a hobby? And there are, we just talked about this in that webinar.
Yeah, Amazon.com showed losses for like the first 14 years of its existence.
Yeah, definitely a hobby.
Yeah, Bezos, you know, just kind of playing.
Yeah, that, a lot of this has to do with getting a good business plan. If you're really trying to do this as a business and you're showing signs of being serious about it, and you hire people perhaps that have the expertise of running the business if you don't run it yourself, or you have the expertise. Wish I had that list. There's a list of what it was about 9 or 10 things that the IRS will take it on, and I left off.
Oh, yeah, we don't have that.
Yeah.
So to answer this question in depth, we did a webinar for my author clients because my company, we work with a lot of authors, and because this is a question a lot of authors have: when does my writing become a hobby or not? And there's 9 criteria that the IRS looks at, and we go through that in great detail in that webinar. If you're interested in that, come talk to me afterwards. I know we're short on time, and we are just now getting to the, well, we've been talking about deductions the whole time, but we're going to go into a lightning mode. I'm going to ask some very quick questions on deductions, and we're going to break.
Can I ask a quick question? Something you just said. You said something about paying your spouse to do things.
Yes.
Can you talk about that for a minute? I mean, doesn't my spouse have to gather his income and pretty much watch his income?
Right. Your business gets it as a deduction, your spouse gets it as income. So why would you do that? Well, if you have a Schedule C business, do you have a Schedule C business? Okay, and you don't have any other employees. This is a new thing in Obamacare, okay? You can't really have any other employees except your spouse. And then you give a really super-duper fringe benefit plan to your spouse, one of which would be medical reimbursements for insurance, medical care, anything legal that's medical. And for your spouse's dependents and your spouse's spouse, that would be you. Now, and so you get the whole thing, the whole package, and those are still pretty solid under Obamacare, under this year. I just did a fair amount of research on that.
So your spouse has to be an employee, though not an independent contractor?
I would say the question is, my spouse has to be an employee, not an independent contractor, to get the benefit. I'm going to have to answer that with an unequivocal yes. It didn't used to be that way, but I think it is now.
And that applies to dependents too?
You can hire your dependents. If they're under 18, you don't even have to pay Social Security taxes on them, which is a really good thing. And if they're actors or models or something, you can pay them a whole lot of money and get a lot of deductions. And they can earn a lot of money and not pay income taxes on it.
So. All right.
And what was that called? What was that?
Section 105. What is what called?
Just what you were talking about.
Medical reimbursement.
Medical reimbursement plan. There's double code section 104 and 105. They go together.
Okay. So very quickly, what key qualifications to write off a business lunch?
Business purpose. You have to prove about when it occurred, what the business purpose was, and the amount that you spent.
A lot of which you can reproduce just from your credit card statement.
Mm-hmm.
Can you repeat lunch write-offs for training? I don't know if I understand that question.
Can I repeat lunch write-offs? Well, like if you have
let's say this one. Can you deduct this as a...
Yeah, like this is every month or something.
And so,
every month you can come here and deduct him each month, right?
Yeah, you could write this off as training or networking. I mean, and if you don't talk to a single person about your business while you're here, you're doing it wrong. Speaking of which, we'll get to that. All right, if I'm working on my laptop at cafes, can I deduct what I'm spending on coffee/food? We kind of already answered that.
Now, if you go out of town and spend that magic overnight thing, then that's, you can take all of that stuff.
Okay.
And you don't have to talk to anybody about business. You can just talk to yourself.
So we have here, we're going to open up to questions, general questions for a few minutes. I put together this list of deductions based off the webinar that we did, which we haven't really gone over. So if you have questions on this that we haven't addressed, start thinking of those. And I've got the last couple questions are related to CPAs, and then I don't want to like cut this off if y'all want to keep going, but I know some of you need to go. So it's kind of, well, let me just throw this open for a question. I'm going to ask if you want to keep going or if you want to cut to networking right now, and I want everyone to raise their hand so we get a feel for it. If you want to keep going, raise your hand. Okay, and if you want to cut straight to networking, raise your hand. Okay, very good. So we're just, thank you. Yeah, this helps.
He's a CPA back there.
Yeah. So, another thing I want to point out, this is like the worst time of year for my dad to come and leave the office. So thank you for that. Yeah.
Oh, everybody's my best friend this time of year.
I should probably ask you if you want to keep going and let you get out of here. So we have some CPA questions. Where do I find a reputable tax accountant that won't break the bank of a startup?
I'd say talk to your friends that have CPAs. Word of mouth. They know if they're getting ripped off. They know if they're expensive. They know if they like the guy. And the biggest complaint is my CPA is too slow. There are so few CPAs out there. It's hard to get one. If they're really fast, it almost makes them suspect to me. You know, don't have any work to do? Why?
How can I minimize my deductions and minimize my taxes? I guess we already talked about that. How do I evaluate a good CPA, accountant, or bookkeeper? Okay, so it's basically another question along those
lines. Mm-hmm. Like if you got a business, like let's say you're in the real estate. I really love real estate. I've got a whole bunch of businesses that I own that are real estate businesses. And if I get a client and he comes in and he says, I like real estate. Have you ever bought a house or a piece of property or run a real estate business? And they ask me that, okay? See, these are good questions to ask. Have you ever done what I'm doing out there in real life? Have you, I would say they're a teacher. Have you ever been a professor in a college, And ask those questions. How well do they know my particular situation? Because there's a lot to know out there, and I don't know everything. If you ask me to audit a big old company, well, I'm not the person for you, So you ask a lot of questions, and it's really important to do this. And I hope everybody hears me say this. Before you go talk to anyone professional, whether they're an attorney or a CPA, about a business, make a bunch of questions. Because you get in the zone, and your mind goes blank, and you can't think of anything. And so unless you're really good at talking on the fly and good if you did cross-examination debate in high school or something, maybe – maybe you're different. But usually you gotta have those questions. So when you got dead time and you think the meeting's over, and it really isn't, you got some questions to fall back on. And just because you have that one question, ask the follow-up questions. There's a lot of follow-up questions that are logical. Don't not ask those questions.
So ask lots of questions, get lots of bids. Mm-hmm. And as a client, I'll recommend my dad. Of course, you know, a little biased here because, you know, he is my dad. All right, so let's go to tax deduction questions. We're moving on to the handout. So I guess we'll just go down these briefly. Does anybody have any questions about computers and equipment deductions? Is that pretty straightforward? Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, depreciation.
I appreciate depreciation.
So there are two ways you can do it. Usually, you can write the whole thing off in the 1 year under, I hate throwing away around code section numbers, but it's section 179, up to like $250,000 or $500,000, something way up there. And then another thing you can do is capitalize it where you're not writing it off in the year you buy it. You bought an asset, and then whatever that asset is, every asset has a useful life on it. Like a computer would be 3 years, and office equipment would be like 5 years, office furniture more like 7 years, and so forth. You know, a rented house that's for residential is, I think it's 29 and a half, and commercial properties 39 years, and so forth.
The strategy here is, let's say I just signed this big contract, and it's a 2-year contract, and I got all the money right now in this year. I'd probably want to take those big items as expenses against that big amount of money that I got this year. Whereas if I know next year is going to be probably better than this year, I'd want to take it as depreciation, so I take some of it off this year and some of it off next year. Is that kind of the right strategy?
Yeah, generally speaking, yeah.
Okay.
Well, you can buy. Do you have to depreciate the item that you bought in the year you bought it? Well, if you never put it in service, you don't have to depreciate it until when you do put it in service. Like, you buy it at the end of the year, well, maybe you put it in service at the end of the year, maybe you didn't put it in service till January. And if you don't need it in the previous year and you're just going to lose it, maybe you can build a case that you never really put it in service, if that's true.
So what if I bought it this year versus next year, and I want to, can I just go ahead and deduct the whole amount?
Yeah, up to like a huge amount of money, way into the six digits.
All right, moving on to travel and conferences. We already talked quite a bit about travel and conferences. Anybody have any final questions on travel/conferences?
Just a quick one, do have like a son that's you've hired as part of your business, and they go out and they travel part time, they do some of the business, but they're away and they maybe socialize too.
Yeah.
Still,
I would think it probably is. There's a reasonableness factor to everything. And if he spent 10 minutes helping you unload your car and then spent 10 hours being with his buddies from school or whatever, that doesn't sound very reasonable. But at the same time, just think of it like, okay, if they're working here for you, you're not controlling their life 24 hours a day. It's just when they're at the office, maybe 8 hours, which sounds like about a third of the time. And so you could kind of use that as a benchmark as far as what's reasonable.
So you can have fun on business trips? That's not
that. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So if I travel, say, for example, theoretically, from California to Leander to visit my son, and while I'm out here, in the 2 weeks I'm out here, I go to Austin and do some things for business, I go to Dallas and do some things for business, can I count the whole expenses, the flight and everything, or do I have to half that because I'm spending some of the time with my family?
Her question was combining business and pleasure on business trips. That's probably okay to do that. I will say this, if you go overseas and do it, you got to be a little bit more careful. Like if you have, we all have to have board meetings. How many of you with your partnerships and S corporations and C corporations have annual board meetings and keep minutes? And go take your husband or wife, assuming they're on the board with you, to a really nice restaurant, okay? Not just a podunky little place. Well, you're supposed to keep annual board minutes, okay? And these are something that is required by law to do, and so we need to do that.
I've been a part of a board meeting on pretty much every family vacation in my entire life. My mom complains, can't we have a non-business vacation, you know, go do something non-business related.
Okay, I guess that speaks a lot right there.
The joy. Okay, I'm going to skip car, unless someone's got a burning car question.
So we talked about cars a lot.
All right, software, it's pretty straightforward. If I buy QuickBooks, it's tax deductible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any questions on software? Okay, subscriptions like Wall Street Journal, PC World, or
right.
Trade Publication, Zero. Mm.
SaaS applications.
So, so here's a question. SaaS is software as a service. So the old model was I pay $400 for Microsoft Office, and I get to use it for however long. The new model is I pay $20 a month for Microsoft Office. It's deductible both ways.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Website and hosting, tax deductible?
Definitely.
I always like that as
the. If it's a business website, not about your puppy dog or something.
All right. So online services, MailChimp, MyBookTable, we already talked about that. Marketing, advertising. Anybody have any questions on anything we've gone over so far? Okay, health insurance. I know this is nice and complicated. So
Let's
say I am a 20-something guy and I was not insured, I'm still not insured, and I go out and I buy insurance. If I buy it as an individual, it's not tax deductible. But if I have my company pay for that health insurance, it is?
Well, insurance is a very complicated thing, and Obamacare has, like, tripled the complication of it. Medical insurance and costs and such. In an S corporation, it kind of doesn't make a lot of sense to be running it through your corporation. A C corporation makes all the sense in the world to have just as many fringe benefits as you can get away with. And same with a Schedule C business. If you have a 104 or 105 medical reimbursement plan, those work very well for that. Partnerships, you know, partnerships and S-corporations, the medical thing is too complicated to talk about in an hour or even in a couple of minutes. And it doesn't work as well as those other two business entities I just mentioned.
Okay, so home office. Who here has a home office right now? Okay, so a lot of people have a home office. How many people are taking a home office deduction? Okay, a lot less.
Okay, why? that's a big question. Do you think you have to have an entire room to be a home office? Anybody think that?
Yeah.
Okay, that's not true anymore. It used to be. Okay. The home office deduction itself is not. It doesn't amount to very much on your tax return usually, maybe just a little bit. But what really makes a big difference is the mileage going from your home office to your first business contact, et cetera, et cetera. If you don't have a home office and your first business contact is 20 miles from home and your last business contact is 15 miles from home, that 35 miles is not deductible because it's commuting, right?
So, for example, my home office is like 6 square feet of one desk that I use for work, and I don't get hardly anything for the desk itself, but it turns, I do use it for business, actually I have a separate business just based there, but it turns my commute from my one business to my other business into a tax deductible trip. And here's the deal, $10,000 of driving at 55 cents a mile, that's $5,500 of deductible expenses. And I drive what my dad kindly calls a rice burner car. So this is one of the ways the government rewards fuel-efficient cars, because it gives you a 55-cent-a-mile thing like you drive in a Suburban. And if you're driving a little tiny Prius, I wish I was driving a Prius, but I'm driving a Rio, it ends up being a win for me. It's not costing me 55 cents to drive that little car.
Yeah, just FYI, it's 56 cents, but go ahead.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to close down here. Does anybody have any questions on any of the deductions down the list? Yes, sir.
If I'm a movie director.
Yes, sir.
But if I were a movie director, and would I be able to write off doing research, going to movies, movie tickets and things like that, as far as looking into my industry to see what's going on?
Questions about movie directors, and can I write off the expenses of going to other movies? Definitely. Yeah.
So this was a lot of our author clients. You know, we'll go to movies as for research, because that's a big currency amongst authors when they're talking about writing. We'll often talk about movies because it's an easier thing. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, decor, retail retail decor that changes every month. So everything that I buy for that decor is not going to stay there all the time. I'm going to take it home when I switch it out. So is everything I buy that I use for the decor area tax deductible?
Okay, this is like, I'm trying to understand what your business is. You're wondering about decor in your business area, your office, your...
Yeah, at the salon where I work.
Okay,
I'm
you work...
I'm setting up a beautiful retail area, and I may switch it out and buy new things for a new display.
Right.
But all of the things that are currently there will be taken home and no longer on display for a
Okay, the question was about business salon, working in a business salon and changing out the decor. And you have to pay for that,
yeah.
Merchandising and such. Yeah, all that is deductible, yes.
Even though it's not going to be there all the time.
Right.
So I'll just take a picture of it in case, so I prove it.
Yeah, even though it's not there all the time, yes.
So what's the story about the catfish parlor and the guy who ran that just so that he can mount...
Mount up his big old trophies that he shot from wherever he got. Yeah, that's... Eat catfish and have weird-looking animals looking at you.
Here's the story. Have you ever been to the catfish parlor?
Yeah.
It's on 183. Apparently, the purpose of that restaurant is so that the owner can go hunting and have to be tax-deductible, because all of the mounted heads on the wall were heads of animals that he shot. So he's going through all this work to get business decor. And so the restaurant's been losing money, like... from what we understand, this whole time. But it didn't matter, because he's got tons of money coming from other places, and he wanted to go hunting and make it tax deductible. Yes, ma'am.
Just like the guy with the really expensive car in the museum. Like,
right.
He wanted to buy Ferraris and stuff like that, so he has a museum of these cars where every once in a while he takes one off and just drives around.
So if I need to go to India to pick up textiles for my retail display, is that trip to India right off?
Yeah, you heard me earlier say about going overseas for business. You got to be careful. For one thing, like board meetings. I looked this up. Don't do your board meetings overseas. Like, especially not on one of those cruises or something. Just don't do it, you know. Now, if you have a nexus in India, you have contacts, you maybe have an office there, you know, and you have a really good reason to go to India. You know, I had an import company that had to travel to Germany all the time, and those were definitely business trips. And they would go there, they'd buy their product, and they were just importing. But what you're described to me about just buying some textiles over in India that perhaps you could get just as easily here. I'm kind of adding in the...
Because I'm going to have a little world market of things, because I am a world traveler.
Uh-huh.
So I'm thinking, okay, so if I go to the Grand Bazaar in Istanbul,
yeah.
These are things that I want to bring back.
I've been there, by the way.
It's pretty great.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's a really good court case on this. If I could remember the guy's name, we talked about it at the webinar. And he liked to travel a lot. And the IRS cooked his goose real well, and it didn't work very well. You really got to be in the groove business-wise if you're doing something like that. And I would just say make your plan in the huddle before you start running your play, okay?
That's a great metaphor. All right, any other questions?
Emily, sorry, I have to take a picture.
Sorry.
Quick
question. So part of my business model is, you know, referring great restaurants, venues for clients. So when I go out to eat, even with my business partner, is that considered, or with clients, is that entertainment or is that market research? And I've heard that market research is a higher deduction
right.
than entertainment.
And you're an event planner, just
yeah.
for some clarification.
Okay, this lady is in event planning, and she's wondering about visiting restaurants, and is that going to be an entertainment expense or market research expense? The entertainment expense, you get 50% deduction on it.
So this is only 50% deductible what they paid for lunch here?
Very likely, yes. And now, what in your particular business, you're in the business of this kind of thing. And so that really does sound like it's getting towards that market research stuff, and that would be 100% deductible. Or it could be, and you mentioned earlier that you're just starting up your business, it could also qualify for research and development costs, which is also another little goody thing in the law. They like you doing research and development.
Which and means you can take it later.
You can take it later, you can prorate it, or you can take it now, you can make an election, you can do whatever. And you don't have to decide at the time, you can decide when you're doing your tax return to decide which it works out best for you.
So CPA can help you.
Now, a good question, to follow up to that, what if each client, you're trying to show them these different venues, essentially doing market research per event, does that mean you can go there often or with every client that you get to try and establish which venue might be the best?
Well, wouldn't hosting the event be deductible?
Right. Yeah, hosting the event, you're in the business of doing this. So for you, all the expenses you had in hosting this event would be a business expense at 100% deduction. The people that participate and come and they get wined and dined, that sounds more like an entertainment expense, business entertainment expense for them. So it can be one thing to one person, another thing to another, and they're sitting in the same table.
All right, last call for questions. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, home office, the only deductible part of a home office that you can take if you don't have an income from that business would be mortgage interest and taxes. Everything else, if you have income to deduct it against, then you deduct it. If you don't have income to deduct that portion of your home office against, then it gets suspended to the next year. And if that year you don't have income that year either, it gets suspended to the next year, so forth and so on until you have a big boom year and then it wipes everything out. And I've seen that happen a bunch with clients.
If I am making income, if I rent, it would be a percentage of the rent. But what if I own my home?
Mm-hmm.
How do you figure out what to deduct?
It's a percentage of however many square feet, they've gotten down to square feet is about the only way to do it nowadays. They used to use other methods, but just count how many square feet you exclusively use for business. And I say that word exclusively with a capital X. That means you better do it. Don't have any children's toys in there, for example. It's exclusively regularly used for business and not for anything else. No personal things going on there at all. Okay, like you buy, say you have a home office that's 3% of your entire house. And you bought your house for $100,000, pick a number. $3,000 of that purchase price would be a home office. And then that little bitty bit of deduction at maybe $20 a year or something, that would be your deduction for it. And you don't have to always use it year after year for a home office. Like you might use it for a few years, and then you don't have an home office for a number of years. And then maybe you pick it up again and do it later and so forth and so on. When it comes time to sell your house, you got to be a little careful because you're selling two homes. Or you could be selling two homes, I should say. You're selling your homestead and you're selling a commercial piece of property. And so you might find yourself, you thought, oh, I get $250,000 tax-free of capital gains if I'm single, and $500,000 tax-free if I'm married. Anybody know that? Know what I'm talking about? Anybody? Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Okay.
Mitt Romney paid so low little taxes, just capital gains. That's what most of his income is capital gains.
Okay. So, but this is excludable capital gains if it's your homestead. But the part in your home office doesn't work with that. And there are ways to not pay taxes on that if it's a significant amount worthy of talking and doing. And one way is like a Section 1031 exchange. And there are other things you can do. But all that would probably require some counsel by most of you.
All right.